Welcome to the Bets and Quotes podcast, a show for the rubes, by the rubes, talking all things Power Trip. Bets and Quotes is hosted by Chuck, better known as Power Trip Bets, and David, the one and only Power Trip Quotes. They were going to get an apartment together and see how things went, but settled on a podcast instead. This show is in no way, shape, or form sponsored by, affiliated with, or even tolerated by the Power Trip, KFAN, or iHeartMedia. In fact, we'd be willing to bet that Chad Abbott never listens to a single episode. And now, here are your hosts, Chuck and David.
Thank you, Chrissy, and welcome to the Bets and Quotes podcast, episode number 3. I am your co-host, Chuck, or Power Trip Bets if you're not into the whole brevity thing. And normally I'd be joined by Power Trip Quotes, but he is on assignment this evening at a golf course near Duluth. So, nice Power Trip Quotes to care. But that's all right, because in your thoughts today, we have a very special treat. An interview with John Kreisel. That's right, the greasy lit John Kreisel joined the podcast to talk all things Vegas, gambling, Power Trip, and to discuss his brand new 2018 version of his book, Still Standing. So we'll just cut right to your thoughts, and we'll be back next week with the bets update and quotes update as usual.
It's time for the weekly segment of Your Thoughts. Copyright Dark Star.
Only one topic for your thoughts this week, but it's quality over quantity as we have our interview with John Kreisel. And even though he was not able to be a part of the interview, Power Trip Quotes did provide a lot of the questions that you'll hear in this interview. So without further ado.
And now, here comes another award-winning Bets and Quotes interview.
That was a hoax, right?
Featuring John Kreisel.
We'd like to welcome John Kreisel to the podcast. John, how are you doing tonight?
Great, how are you?
I am doing fabulous. They always say to start with your hardest or most pressing question right off the bat, so here it goes. When's your next trip to Vegas?
We were looking at August. The gal was just downstairs working out, watching The Bachelorette, and was yelling out that she needs to start looking at flights because now she wants to go because they were in Vegas or something like that. So
nice.
And I'm not going to argue with that for sure.
I think you're about the last person to argue with a trip to Vegas.
Right.
So you got engaged in Vegas just a couple months ago. Are you guys planning on getting married in Vegas?
We have talked about it, but no, we're going to get married at Grandview Lodge in September.
So, oh, wow.
Yep. It's still a little bit of a destination wedding. I'd wanted to do Vegas, but it would have been tough for some of the family to get to. We're doing a very small ceremony, probably like 50, 55 people. Uh-huh. And so that's still much larger than what we would have had in Vegas because not as many people would have came.
Right. One of the things I always love, because I'm just a total Vegas nerd, one of the things I love to ask people is, tell me about your first trip to Vegas. Like, what hotel did you stay at? What are some of the things you did on your very first trip to Vegas?
I had just turned 21, and my dad and my brother and my sister and I went. And kind of the deal was, my dad was not a man that had a lot of money, but it was a big deal that he would say, I'm paying for the hotel and the airfare for each of us when we turn 21. And so we stayed at the Golden Nugget downtown.
Oh, that's nice.
Whenever he goes, it's downtown. And I wanted to pick the nicest one that was as close to a strip-type hotel as possible. And so I think that was 2002, perhaps, that I went. Early 2003, February. So I'd been 21 for maybe 4 months. It was awesome. That was the start of my obsession with it. And we just cruised around Fremont Street, and it would be, my dad would get pretty lit, and then my brother and I would have to ditch him, kind of, because he'd be hitting the slot machines yelling, nothing crazy, but he's funny. And at that time, trying to pick up chicks and stuff, it's not, you know, Pops is going to be a C block. And then by the evening, as my brother doesn't drink, he'd be ditching me, and I'd just be cruising around alone.
Hey, that's a fun city to be alone in, though, of any city, I guess.
Yeah, you meet people from all walks of life at blackjack table. At that time, all I played was blackjack. Uh-huh. That was the only game I played, basically. And I think it was on my second to the last evening, I walked across to Binion's, and at that time it was Binion's Horseshoe. And there was this dude, it was very Vegas Vacation-like. There was this dude just with a cocktail. He looks pretty classy.
Uh-huh.
And I was just looking at the craps table, trying to take it all in. And he's like, "Hey, young fella," he's like, "let me teach you how to play." And so at that age, maybe I wasn't as bright. Now I'd look back and be like, "Stay away." Maybe he's going to try and drag me to a sex dungeon or something.
Right.
But yeah, he taught me how to play, and just, he broke it down and made it super simple. And then I fell in love with craps, and I've been playing that also ever since.
Fun. Yeah, craps is a great game because it's such a social game, whereas, you know, just sitting in front of a slot machine sometimes can be a little bit boring.
Right, which is why we do the team slots method. If you got three or four friends, you put in a hundo on their max bat. It's smart, too, because then you're building up comps.
Yep.
You switch out certain people's cards, and then pretty soon you've got all the free room offers, and the cocktail waitresses, as long as you tip them well, you know, they're going to keep coming back. So team slots is social, but, of course, terrible, terrible advantage. It's a huge house advantage.
Oh, yeah. Is there something that, is there any, like, traditions that you have, like, something that you have to do on every trip in Vegas, like a restaurant you go to, or maybe something you have to go see?
It used to be, you know, early on when I would go downtown, you know, I'd have to go and play blackjack at Binion's, and I've kind of got back to that a little bit. Now I pretty much stay on the strip, and it's not very often that I get back down to Fremont Street. This last time, though, I made it a point. Peppermill, breakfast at Peppermill is something every trip for sure now.
That place is awesome.
Oh, yeah, and it's a throwback, too. I mean, yep. I wasn't alive in the 70s, but bringing Rosen and Lawyer Lambert there for the first time, that you should have seen their eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And now that's their jam.
Yep.
But last time when I was there with Dov and Nordo and Paul and Tree, we did Peppermill breakfast, and then we went down to Binion's and played some blackjack, had a freaking blast, and it was nice and dead. I think the key now at my age, I feel like, is Fremont Street's fine in the daytime, but it gets weird in the evening and just gets too chaotic that then I want to get back to the strip.
And you have all the people that are asking for money or trying to put on a street show and things, and that's, I can kind of do without that. It's like, I like the gambling down there, and sometimes the vibe is cool, but yeah, I'm kind of the same way. When we go down there, it's usually daytime.
Yeah.
So you are a normal regular in Vegas with the Power Trip, and this is the first year that I went on the Power Trip in March, and you weren't there. Why weren't you there?
I had three paid speaking events that week. Contracts were signed and everything. And it was just financially the correct move, because either make some money that week or not make that money and then probably lose some, you know.
Right.
So, the room's free and stuff like that. But, taking a swing at the tables doesn't always work out. So yeah, it hurt to listen that week and not be there, but yeah, financially, yeah, that's the decision I had to make.
Oh, definitely. How many speaking engagements do you typically do in a year?
Oh, north of 20 now. This year's probably going to be 30, I would think. I don't have my schedule in front of me, but this is my busiest year so far, and already the fall is getting booked up, so it's good. Helps me, gives me some good spending money for Vegas too.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. Well, you were definitely missed by the Rubes in in Vegas. A lot of people, I think, were just in disbelief that Creasel was not in Vegas. So
I wanted to be there, and I missed everybody. I had a blast. All the other I've been with on every Vegas power trip, but not this one. Yeah. Next year I'll be back.
Absolutely. And since I'm a Vegas nerd, I listen to the 500 podcast with Tim and Michelle, and I've heard you on there a couple of times. Do you still get a lot of information from that? Do you still listen to their podcast?
Oh, absolutely. What I'll do is I'll kind of binge listen in the lead up to a trip, yep. Or if it's been too long between trips, then I will power through a few of them. I have like probably a 45 to 50 minute drive to work in Anoka, so. Uh-huh. I'm able to get through a lot of those, but Tim and Michelle are two, besides the fact that they're two awesome human beings, they're just so, the chemistry that they have on there, it's fun to listen to, and then, you know, I'm sure you agree, one of the most awesome things about Vegas is, if you go every 6 months, people might think that's a lot, but still, in between the last trip and then the 1 6 months later, so much changes. New restaurants, new shows, new things to do. And that's the way, in my opinion, to stay up on what's hot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's amazing, you know, depending upon what my interval is typically once a year. And it is just the pace of change is unbelievable, which is fun because there's always something new to do. But it seems like every trip, there's always something that I used to like to do that is gone now. But that's, I guess Tim always says, you know, don't ever fall in love too much with one thing in Vegas because you know it's going to change. So,
right. What's your sweet spot as far as length? Then, if you go once a year, how many nights do you shoot for? That's kind of the perfect length.
We try to go for the power trip in March. We actually went 5 nights, so that. It had been too long, and I was like, let's go 5 nights, and it was good, you know, because part of the problem is if we go for, you know, 3 nights, it seems like you're trying to cram a million things into 3 days, and like with 5 nights, it was nice because, you know, we could kind of go at a more leisurely pace and still get to everything we wanted to do.
Right, yeah, then you can sprinkle in like a pool day or something and relax and don't feel like you're missing out on anything.
Exactly. So do you do a lot of sports betting when you're there, or is it just kind of depend on, you know, what sports are going on when you're there?
It does depend on what sport's going on, but I'll bet on anything. I was on a work trip in Reno earlier this month,
yep.
And I was betting on hockey. And I'll bet on hockey, but to be honest, of the four major sports, it's the one I know the least about.
Right.
So yeah, I was kind of having to scrape to get information and stuff like that, but I did okay. I swung and missed on one of the overs, but NBA I crushed.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was good. I basically, unless it's only soccer on, I will bet on some sort of sporting event.
Oh yeah, I find myself bet because I'm one that I don't bet baseball because I don't feel like I know it well enough to bet it. And yeah, if I'm in Vegas and there's baseball games on, heck yeah, I'm putting something down just to have something going.
Right, and then you could do a parlay, even a three-team parlay on baseball, and you're not going to get the same odds as you would on an NFL parlay or a parlay where it's going to be a point spread. But still, you can get a little grease going.
Oh yeah. Do you have any like really crazy win or bad beat stories from your sports betting?
There was one. Oh, when I was there with a bunch of Sauce's friends, the first time I had met a bunch of them, Seen Bear and a bunch of those guys.
Uh-huh.
We had I think a three team NFL parlay, maybe a four team, and I think it might have been Atlanta and Detroit. Anyway, basically, whoever it was, I think Atlanta was involved, if I remember correctly, and it was. They're getting in field goal range. They're ahead. Mm-hmm. If they kick the field goal, we're good.
Right.
We're safe on the points. But basically, anything but a pick six would be we win this bet then. And it was a super greasy bet.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, what are they doing even throwing the ball? Pick six.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, there were some F-bombs being tossed, and there was someone near us, and it actually made me feel less bad about that, about our loss. They must have had a lot of money on that, because they were absolutely beside themselves. We did great on college bets the other day, the previous day. This would have made a very nice winning trip into a super, super successful trip, but that's how it goes.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's awesome. So one of the things that's come about this year, and you being a former state representative, is the legalized sports betting with the Supreme Court decision that can't be restricted. And so far, obviously, Nevada had legalized sports betting. And since then, Delaware, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and now Mississippi have passed laws. So we've got it legal in five states. What are your thoughts on Minnesota? Do you think that Minnesota is going to just kind of go at its own pace on this? Or do you think they'll feel pressure, you know, if Wisconsin or Iowa legalizes it? Like, just what are your kind of general thoughts on legalized betting in Minnesota?
Well, I mean, if you drive on our roadways, you know that a lot of the state just generally is not in a hurry for anything. And so I was led to believe, and the information, and of course, Pat Garofalo is a good friend. He's the one who introduced the legislation and is going to continue to push it. He loves sports betting big time. I mean, he knows his stuff. He loves it. He enjoys it. And he's a good legislator. He knows how to build coalitions.
Mm-hmm.
And he had said that he was pretty optimistic that there was even a chance for a special session if it wasn't to get done in the regular session, which there just wasn't. If the Supreme Court had made their decision a month earlier, I think we would have it here. But I think next session, next year, is going to be a big push for it because other states are opening up. And I don't think it's illegal if Vegas wants to say, all right, well, you can bet mobily through the PlayMGM app or the Cantor Gaming app or whatever.
Right.
That I use that when I'm in Vegas, but you have to have location settings on. It has to be within Nevada.
Yep.
Well, now, how does that work? Does it have to be in that state? Maybe to deposit it, yes. You always had to bring cash to the sports book, put it in your account, and then you could bet from your phone. So that's something that, well, on my next trip, could I put $1,000 in my account and then bet from Minnesota during the football season? And I think when that starts getting looked at, then Minnesota's really missing out, and I think then the pressure's on. And depending on how these elections go this fall and who the governor ends up being too, that's gonna have an impact on it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it definitely sounds positive. And by the way, listeners, if Pat is an awesome follow on Twitter. So if you're not following him on Twitter, he's an awesome person to follow just for his general knowledge and especially as it relates to sports betting. So we'll transition a little bit. I could talk about gambling for hours, but got some topics to get through. So we'll move on to your life on the power trip, which is kind of what we talk about here on the podcast a little bit, is just all things power trip. And you first appeared on the power trip about 2 weeks after you came back to Minnesota, your first trip back to Minnesota after you were at Walter Reed in D.C. How did your appearance? How did that first appearance on the power trip come about?
I was coming back for a fundraiser. There were some friends that were having a fundraiser at O'Gara's to help make my house handicap accessible, and in an effort to increase awareness and publicity about it, the National Guard Public Affairs manager was going around, was bringing me to different radio stations, different television stations. And it went awesome, and it was fun, and it's easy to not be nervous when you're heavily medicated. And then going in on the power trip, though, we clicked. And Chris Hockey said, so this was May of 2007,
mm-hmm.
And Hockey said, when you come back from Walter Reed. And they had said it was going to be a 2-year recovery, but I ended up speeding that up and I got back in 9 months.
Yep.
He said, when you get back for good, we'll have you in and we'll have John Kreese a week. And so I came back and we had John Kreese a week. And then he said, you should come in every Tuesday. It went great. He said people liked it. And I've been on really ever since.
And people still like you. I think you're probably one of the most popular recurring guests on the show.
I appreciate it.
You definitely get a lot of Twitter chatter.
It's fun.
Oh yeah,
it's just fun, and I grew up listening to the KQ Morning Show. I loved it.
Yep.
I would listen to it on the school bus, and then once I got in the military and started it, once I deployed, and then internet radio became a thing. I listened to KQ and the Power Trip.
Yep.
And then I come back and I get to be a part of it. And I listen to all the other shows on the fan when it was Chad and Barrero and then Chad Harbin and then Dan Barrero's show and then Sludge and Lake.
Yep.
And that was my whole afternoon was squared away when I worked at the Ink Factory. And then to fast forward to 2018 and the fact that I've got to be a part of this nonsense for 11 years is beyond me.
Yeah, it's awesome. What I was going to ask, did any of your, because back in the day, obviously, you probably, when you were there in 07, was Meat Sauce even on the show at that point, or was that pre-Meat Sauce?
I don't think he was around,
mm-hmm.
but not, he was, I think, more of an intern, if I remember correctly. He started, I think it was, like 08 is when we've heard the story about when he got fired.
Right.
And came back,
yep.
Which is why I'm glad I'm not a paid employee of KFN, or I would have been fired a long time ago.
Well, you've never cursed on the air, to your credit, so that's a good thing.
No, I haven't. I think the only time they hit the dump button was when I made a Peter North reference that didn't even go as greasy as they thought it was going to. So,
yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Especially with my Vegas ones. If there is a cuss that was going to happen, it would be there. It has not.
Well, because I did prop bets when we were out in Vegas, and one of the prop bets was whether or not, you know, somebody would curse on air, and I wrote that with it because I was thinking like Alex Scooby might be there because he's usually a regular, and he wasn't there this year either. So, you know, I kind of wrote that with Scooby in mind, but I figure if it's going to happen, it's going to happen out in Vegas, and unfortunately,
right,
didn't happen this year.
Right, and then the one last year, the guy that they had to hit the dump button on was wearing a shirt with my picture on it, and it says, "I'm having a great time." And of course, they hand him, you know, they ask him a question about something, and as hockey's going around interviewing people,
yep,
they said, "Do you having a great time, like your shirt says?" He says, "F and A." I was like, "Oh my god!"
So
wear someone else's face on your shirt if you're gonna.
That's right. Kreese gets the blame for that one.
Right.
So one of the segments that you did early on was called In the Crease, where you would go interview some of the Vikings and such. Who named that? Did you name that, or was that somebody else that came up with that?
I think Chris and Mike named it.
Okay.
They were when Superstar was on.
Yep.
And I would go down there, and it was, I'd have to think quickly because I didn't know who I was interviewing ahead of time. And Tom West would, and Hockey, you know, Hockey talked to Tom West. Tom West would come over and be like, "All right, today it's going to be Leslie Frazier." I'd be like, "Oh crap, the defensive coordinator. All right." And then the one day, Adrian Peterson, and this is when he was liked in the town and he was a rookie.
Yep.
And he made me feel intelligent, at least.
That's good.
Yeah, he's a dull one.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, that's become evident over the years.
Yeah.
So you've been a part of a lot of memorable power trip moments, you know, obviously the Vegas trips and everything. I think a lot of listeners would probably characterize your blue mold for the Charge Challenge payoff as one of the all-time moments on the power trip. What would you rank as maybe your top or, you know, couple of your top highlights from your power trip career?
Oh, I think the one that stands out in my mind the most is when I got to, because I did have to kind of take a little break from the power trip when I was a legislator.
Yep.
You don't, and so when I decided to not run for re-election, I was driving, I gave my retirement speech on the House floor, my truck was packed, and I was going straight from the Capitol to the airport to fly to Vegas for my friend's bachelor party.
Mm-hmm.
We had made plans for this long in advance in the legislative session, and like at the end of, it was supposed to end at the end of April, but with the Viking stadium and stuff, it ended up going way past that. Well, we booked it months in advance, and I thought, well, if we push it that far out, we're going to be just fine. Well, Barely made it there, but on the drive there, they had asked me when I was done to call. Hockey texted me when I was on the House floor and said, will you call the show on your way to the airport? And I said, yes. So I called, and I was able to kind of sum up my time in the legislature, and it was a fun moment for me because it kind of allowed me to reflect on how crazy the past few years had been in my life, going from Walter Reed to being in the legislature. But
right.
Then it was kind of the realization that now I can be back on the morning show too, and I can get my life back calmed down a little bit. And that was probably my favorite moment. And for them to say how proud they were of me, because I looked up to these guys. These were dudes I listened to on the radio, and then, you know, they've since become great friends.
Yep. That's awesome. So one of the things I was going to ask you about as we transition to talking about your book is, do you happen to remember the review that the superstar Mike Morris gave your book when it came out the first time?
I don't.
All right. Well, I have the clip here for you.
When I read John Kreisel's book, and you guys tell me if you did this as well, did you or did you not scan the entire book for your name, first and foremost?
I did a quick scan through the entire book looking for my name. When I didn't find it, I threw it out the window.
I love that.
And his name is in the book.
It is. That's what's so funny is, yeah, they always complain that they're not listed in the book. And it's like, no, Chris, Corey, and Superstar are all listed in the book. So maybe Meat Sauce can complain if he wants to, but
I didn't. But see, I don't have in the back, I don't have the, you know, the references with every page that each name is listed on or this and that. So they couldn't go back and look at Mike Morris, page 63 or whatever.
Exactly.
Page on, so.
Actually had to read the book. What a concept, right?
Right.
So talking about the book, one of the questions that, you know, we had was, you know, how long was the process or how difficult was the process to turn, you know, all these thoughts and stories and everything of all these amazing things that happened to you into a book? You know, was it a long process? Was it something that was hard for you to do, or did it flow pretty easily?
It flowed pretty easily because I'm working with Jim Cosmo, who's the author of the book. He did such an awesome job, and he made the decision to write it in the first person present tense.
Yep.
So we did a series of interviews, and then he would transcribe them and put them in different chapters. And he allowed me to be involved enough where if I wanted to move around chapters or if I wanted to write certain chapters, it was fine. So I was able to collaborate quite a bit. But he did the majority of the legwork, and I suppose I don't have legs, so I can't do legwork. But it was a lot of work, and it's seemed a lot easier at first, and then you get it on paper and you read it and you're like, oh, this doesn't sound right. Let's flip this around or let's move this sentence down here. And it took a good 2 years when we wrote it the original time, that we started it in 2008 and it was published in July of 2010. So it was a ton of work, but I feel like redoing it or making the changes that we did to reflect the past 10 years and try to make the book more real and less corny. Not that it wasn't real before, but I think at that stage in my life, I was so focused on making it a little more fluff, a little more G-rated, a little more, like I cared more what people thought at that time.
Uh-huh.
And so there are certain things I left out or certain things I sugarcoated, whereas this time around, it's okay to throw a few cuss words in. And there were a couple before, but, you know, my dad's part is awesome. You know, it's like when he got the phone call and, or when my mom got the phone call and he was right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, to be honest with you, that making the changes and updating it was going to be easy. I thought, okay, cool, we're starting that. I think in like November, December, something like that, this thing's going to fly. And I could not have been more wrong.
Wow. So it definitely sounds like, you know, the thought process with the second book was every bit as difficult in terms of like, you know, coming up with an approach, because it's not just a matter of, you know, because I think your first book, what I loved about your first book too, is it was 44 chapters, which sounds like a lot, but, you know, it was broken up nicely. And when I read it, you know, you get 15 minutes here, 30 minutes there. It was like, I could read a few chapters at a time and then move on. So it wasn't, so for the rewrite, it wasn't just a matter of you slapped on a couple of chapters or something like that. You actually went through the entire book and modified it.
We did, yep. There are some chapters we got rid of as part of the one of the crappy things about, you know, divorce is, you know, the law gets involved, and I could not mention the ex-wife by name or the kids by name in there because they're her children.
Right.
And so it was one of those that we're going to have to redo the book, and whether it was an effort to just, you know, maybe a strategy to try it and say, well, then he can't, he's not going to rewrite the book. Then I looked at it as an opportunity. I try to look at the bright side, and I said,
right.
Well, the book was published in 2010. A ton has changed in my life since then. This is a chance, you know, how many times do we get a chance to make something and we like it, but then go, but we can do better. And so all of the things that, because you can't unpublish a book.
Right.
So you know, we went through, and there are certain parts that I'm kind of like, oh, I kind of sound, that kind of sounds corny, and I don't know what I was going for at that time. Whereas now it's like, this is a chance to really drive home a message that, you know, we're all going to go through some adversity in life, and not what happened to me isn't going to happen to almost anybody else. But when we have that adversity, if we have a positive attitude and a sense of humor, the ability to laugh at ourselves, you can get through it and get through anything in life. And then when you do get through that adversity and look back on it, you will have learned from it and you will be stronger for it. And so I tried to make this version of the book more like my motivational speeches and say that people can read that and it puts everything in perspective for them. I don't want anyone to go through what I did. This will kind of teach them the lessons that I've learned without them having to go through it. So really it gave a chance for us to be a lot sharper with our messaging, especially in the later part of the book. Add some pictures that I thought should have been in the first one.
Yep.
And I think most importantly, getting my dad's part in there, because that part is critical.
Yeah, that absolutely sounds fantastic. I can't wait to read that and read about your dad, because I'm sure, you know, I as a parent myself, it's like I can't imagine the emotions that a parent would go through, and to get that perspective on it. So that sounds fantastic.
Right.
I was going to ask you, when you were doing the updated version of the book, how did your emotions differ compared to when you wrote the book for the first time? Because, you know, obviously, like you said, 10 years later, did you experience different emotions? Did you, you know, experience a lot of the same emotions when you first sat down to write everything?
I think they're different. It's I feel like I'm at a point in my life now where I don't know, I'm just doing a lot of reflecting, and when you go through the book to redo it, it completely, I mean, it brings back all of those emotions, all of those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I had a chance to go through my external hard drive that have all my pictures from Iraq and some of the laughs that we shared back then, some of my buddies that are no longer with us that died over there.
Yep.
So yes, it does bring back some tough emotions, but those are good emotions. Like, yeah. If I ever get to a point where I'm bored with what happened to me, or I'm not sad that Corey, Brian, and Jimmy died in Iraq, then something's wrong with me. And I feel like it's those emotions that keep me grounded, that remind me how fortunate I am every day. And it's easy to feel like, you know, I feel like I love my life so much, I can't believe that it's my life. So it's easy sometimes to get cocky and feel like I got things handled. And by reading that, it's a good reminder that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I was almost dead. And so it's a good way to keep grounded.
Yep. You know, I thought it was very impressive when you're on the power trip that you made the statement that if you had to do it all over again, you know, going to war, losing your legs, you know, having to go through the difficult recovery, learning to walk again, all of that, that you would do it again in a heartbeat. I think that's something, you know, that's really admirable, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who'd be like, heck no, I'd never go back to Iraq. But it seems to have made you the person that you continue to be today.
I appreciate it. It's just, obviously, I know I'm not glad that it happened, of course not.
Right.
But I know that nothing I do can change what happened. I can spend the rest of my life looking back on that day, wishing it didn't happen, wishing we took a different road. And all that's going to do is make me sad, and it's going to be a waste of energy. But I have no control over that. What I do have control over is just trying to make today great, to have a great time, to be, you know, as great as I can to Kayla, and just enjoy every minute of every day, because we're so fortunate. And I feel like probably the most important thing, or one of the most important things this taught me, and I think it's very applicable today considering how big social media is that we need to learn how to be happy with our lives, with our situation, regardless if it's we're missing legs, or, you know, we don't have this going for us, or don't have that going for us. It's so easy to look at the neighbor and say, God, they've got it great, or look on social media and say that person has the perfect life. And no, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. That might just be a snapshot of them enjoying their day, but more than anything, this taught me to just be thankful to be alive and focus on the good things in life rather than what I don't have or what I could be doing, instead of, you know, be happy in the moment, you know?
Yeah. Well, and especially when, you know, like, my media of choice is Twitter, and it's like, there's so much negativity on there. And a lot of it is exactly that, where it's like, you know, people see somebody else, you know, having a good time or doing something fun, and they've got to dig their nails into them or take a shot at them or something. And you just, it's like, life is way too short to get, you know, to be that negative. It's like, find something in your own life that you can do to make yourself happy rather than hoping that other people are having a bad day, you know?
Right. So. Right. Now I get guilty. I'll fire back at people, especially after a couple cocktails, you know. It's easy to go. And that's another bad thing about Twitter. And then I look like an idiot, because the next day I'll read through and I'm like, oh, that didn't sound good. Instead of just going, you know, that person didn't bother me. It was more of just, it's funny to fight. I'm a fighter, so I like to fight back.
Right.
But, you know, but that's a boneheaded look, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like,
block and move on.
Don't let those people drink. Right, block and move on.
Yeah, that's the Corey model. So I've only ever had to block one person with Power Trip Bets, and that was somebody that was taking shots at Tyler George. And I'm like, you know what? I don't need to read this. And I'm like, so I finally blocked somebody.
Oh, which, God, who would take a shot at him?
I know. I'm like, it was before they'd won the gold, and they made some reference to, like, he always chokes or something. And I'm like, I don't need to read this. And so block and move on. And guess what? He won gold.
So they must have had money bet on a previous curling match or something, and they're still pissed at him.
I don't know. I don't know how you take a shot, Tyler. He's the man.
Yes.
So one thing I want to ask you about, too, was, so spoiler alert, if you haven't read John's book, he got to meet the president, President Bush, three times. And what really struck me about it is you really seemed moved by just the sincerity that him and Laura displayed when they were around you. And that really seemed to have a big effect on you. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, just meeting President Bush and the attitude that he displayed for you?
Yes, I had at first wanted to, you know, when I woke up from my coma, there's nurses there and they take great care of you and they say, let us know if you need anything. And being ripped on medication, like super ripped on medication, yeah. You take that as anything. And so instead of like, yeah, fluff my pillow, my head's a little crooked, or hey, I couldn't really move. I was like, I want to meet the president. And they're like, yeah, okay. Well, eventually, Governor Pawlenty was able to help line up him, President Bush coming to pin on my Purple Heart. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of a surprise. I didn't know until probably an hour before when they had to move me to a separate room, Secret Service popped in and all that. And when he walked in the room, there's just this aura about him, because it's the same stride you see on TV when he's walking to the podium to give a speech or whatever.
Right.
And so you see him as the president, and then he opens his mouth, and you realize this is a guy, an awesome guy, but it became clear that he takes very seriously the decisions he had to make, and it affects him. He was sad at the fact that I had been injured, ultimately for a decision that he made for us to invade Iraq. And I would go back in a heartbeat. I think it was the right move. Even considering how it turned out, I would do it again. But
right.
You could see that it was, I have so much more respect. I had already respected him, but seeing like it wasn't looking at me and going, you poor thing, I wish we didn't go there now. No, it's more saying, I'm so proud of you. You know, I'm sorry that we put you in harm's way. And that was a separate visit where he addressed probably 10 of us wounded warriors at the White House. And he said, this was a decision that we had to make. I'm very sorry that you've all had to go through this, but I'm so proud of your progress and how hard you're working to get better. We're all behind you. And you just see into it as a person, because we all look at it and go, oh, yeah, this decision's awful. Imagine being in that spot and having it affect lives. I wouldn't want to have to live with that.
Right. That's a ton of responsibility.
Yeah.
So that was one thing, too, that struck me when I was reading the book, because it's just like, you know, you're just so wrapped up in the story. And then, you know, he comes in and he pins the Purple Heart on you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you got a Purple Heart out of this. I'm curious.
Yeah, like, the medal that you don't want to get.
Yeah. Like, how often do you look at it? And, you know, what do you think when you look at it?
I'm proud of it. It's the one, like I said, you don't want to get. But if you get it, it's... it means a lot. My license plate has the Purple Heart on it, and I have one hanging in my office at work. And so I see it every day. I'm very, very proud of it. It's one of those that, you know, okay, again, it's not the one I wanted, but
right.
I have it. And it does show that I did actually shed blood for the country. And so it means a lot.
Yeah. It's always amazing when I see those license plates and you just think of what somebody had to go through to do that. And that's just, it's incredible service to our country.
I appreciate it.
A couple final questions for you, because I've already taken up more of your time than I said I was going to. But have you ever been approached to do a movie based upon the book?
Nope. That would be awesome. Someone on Twitter said it the other day. they were like, oh, this needs to be a movie or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that would be awesome. It would be scary, though. It's kind of scary having my life as a book, but then, you know, to have it up on the big screen, I don't know, they better get a handsome bastard to play me.
Well, that was the follow-up question, is who would you choose to play John Kreisel in the movie?
Oh, that would be, I haven't even thought of that. I don't know who I get compared to, really. It's usually not a flattering comparison if someone's like, oh, you look like this person. I don't know. So, yeah, it would have to be someone just super handsome.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even think about it right now.
Probably the Baby Goose, right?
There you go. Can't go wrong with Baby Goose.
Absolutely. So you're having a big book release party on July 19th at Summit Brewing Company. Yep. Are you prepared for the throngs of people that are going to invade Summit Brewing Company on July 19th?
Can't wait. And if they buy a book, we buy them a beer. And so there's Jim's working on possibly some musical entertainment. He's got some neighbors that play some low-key music in the background, and we're going to chat. And it's not going to be nothing formal. That's what I love. We'll answer any questions and stuff, but it's going to mainly be just hanging out, chatting, drinking beers, and enjoying the evening.
Fun. And are you going to be coherent enough the next morning to join the power trip? Because they're going to be at U.S. Bank Stadium the next morning.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely not going to get lit at the book signing. So, since basically I don't even drink during the week anymore, I'm breaking my streak to do that, except on vacation, of course. I do tie one on then, but yeah, I'll make sure to not get too lit, because I would love to go and be a part of that broadcast if they'll have me.
Absolutely. All right, John. Well, thank you so much for this interview. You know, the pictures in your book are amazing. You know, I found myself looking at, especially the picture of the five of you that was taken 2 hours, you know, before the explosion. I must have looked at that picture 50 times. And you know, just all the pictures in there really give it context. So I'm really looking forward to seeing all the new pictures that'll get added to the book as well. So once again, can you tell people where they can get a copy of the book now, and also about the party that's going to take place?
Absolutely. So my website is johnmkreisel.com. There's information on the book. You can click to download a sample of it to see if you can get hooked. And then there's links to purchase the book as well. It's also available on Amazon.com, Itascabooks.com. Most bookstores should have it in stock here pretty quickly. And if people want to wait until July 19th, it's a Thursday night, we'll be having a book release party, very informal, at Summit Brewing Company in St. Paul from 6 to 9 p.m. Whoever buys a book that evening will buy them a beer, have a chance to hang out, chat, and throw a couple back.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I think it's safe to say that will be lit.
That will be so lit.
Well, thank you so much, John. I really appreciate your time tonight.
You got it, brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, John, for joining the podcast today. We really appreciate it. And be sure to get a copy of his book, or show up at the party and get a free beer with a copy of his book. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Bets and Quotes podcast. Be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you think we're hideous, please lie.
Coming back.